Welcome back to another exciting episode of Extra Features. Enemy 3, we have a fabulous director, Daniel Florizano. His film Evil Rise is available somewhere. He'll tell us by the end of the film because I don't know. They sent me screeners, so they never really helped me out. I don't even know where he lives. I'd love to tell you guys, but I don't. But his film is awesome, so please see it. Welcome to the show. This reminds me a little bit of a Brady Bunch episode in Hawaii. I don't know if you've ever seen it.
I have not, but no, I know about the Brady Bunch, yeah.
Okay. Well, the Brady Bunch find an idol and bad things happen to them.
Okay.
And that's
okay.
About it. That's the only part of your movie that's got anything to do with the Brady Bunch is that one part.
All right. I'll check it out.
So there you go. And it's a 2-part episode, so you're going to have to stay for a whole, like, hour and be a bit the length of your film. So when you start making a film, where do your ideas come from?
We are going to do something a little bit different. I had this idea about writing about some kind of a tea from back in Brazil, and the original idea was to do something related to that. But then, where people would drink this potion, this tea, and they would get like somehow possessed. And, go out doing crazy things and it was a completely different story that we wanted to make. But, in the end, we ended up having problems with, the other two producers, and then the whole idea got scratched out. And then I thought, why not, I'll take something similar to the original idea and I'll spin around. And we'll make something completely different. So, I came to Scott and I pitched him the idea, and he was like, dude, that sounds great. Write it up, and we'll make it happen. And that's kind of like how it all started.
Well, I want to start a little bit further than that. You have a nice beach location, beautiful beach.
Sure.
What beach is this? And do you need a permit for a beach where you're from?
No, man. No, I'm Brazilian, right, originally. And so that, the whole idea about the tea, we wanted to do something with ayahuasca. I don't know if you're familiar with that tea. It's found in the jungles of Peru and Brazil in the Amazon, and if you drink it, supposedly to, kind of clear up your mind in such a way where, you be able to explore things that you never have before in your life. But also in Brazil, it's also a religion, so people, they have this, they drink that tea and they have like a religious ceremony every week, it's one of the many religions we have in Brazil. But so with the Evil Rises, we wanted to do something. Okay, how about, we have these kids playing in a beach in Brazil, and they they find this statue, this idol item, thing, and then we go from there. There'll be like an evil spirit inside, and we just depart from there. But then, obviously we didn't have, the budget to fly down to Brazil or anything. And we are very fortunate to live in San Diego, where we have all these beautiful beaches, And so we found a friendly beach, which was kind enough to allocate a space for us. It's a beach called Imperial Beach in San Diego. It's the closest beach it borders Tijuana, Mexico. It's right on the border, and we filmed there. It took us two days to film the whole thing. It was hard, but it was perfect, and it worked out great.
Well, that was close. Okay. things will happen. Let's continue on. You also have a church location, which I want to go in a little bit more depth later. But with the church, was the church easy to get? Did the church just say, give us the money, let you in, or did they give it to you for free?
The church was great. We are also able to swing that because Scott, our producer, he went to a Catholic school, and they had that church inside of it's inside of the school pretty much, and Scott was able to talk to them, and they were like, yeah, you know, since you're an alumni, we'll just hook you up. You know, that's pretty cool. Yeah.
So something like Scott does a lot of work here. He gets you.
Scott, man, Scott's the man. He can pull all these things. He's really good.
And let's go to the house. I mean, those are the three big locations: the church, the beach, and the house.
Yes, absolutely.
So how did you get the house? Was it an Airbnb, or did you borrow somebody's?
The house, we were location scouting, and we were posting ads everywhere, you know, Craigslist, and I don't remember if we used Facebook at the time, but we were trying, you know, all kinds of different venues, and finally someone just responded and said, yeah, I have this house. It's a historical house in the heart of San Diego, and it's pretty much what you're looking for, you know, because we were looking for some kind of a different style of house, you know, with this different windows, you know, and once he showed us the pictures, we're like, yeah, man, that looks pretty good. And the person living there at the house on that time happened to be also a filmmaker or a aspire filmmaker. You know, we even improvised a joke in the middle of the film because he had this big, super large camera statue inside of the house. And if you watch the film, we cracked a joke about that when Claudio and the detective are going up the stairs. Like he asked her if her grandfather was a filmmaker. so we were able to like use a few things that were already in the house, and so that's how that came about. Somebody just responded to our ad, and we were able to work out a price and everything.
So I want to discuss a little bit more. How did you find your statue? Because that statue is so important to your film. I know it's a tiny little piece of thing, but it couldn't have been easy to find.
Well, that's a good question because we were looking for that statue everywhere. We were like, man, you know, where can we find? Let's go on eBay. Let's go on. You know, all kinds. Craigslist. I went all around the many thrift stores and Goodwills, and Scott did the same. And our designer did the same. We could not find anything. So finally, we have this friend, Joe Ochoa. He's a very good artist, and we pitched him the idea how we wanted the statue to be, and he was like, man, I can make that statue for you guys. You know, we agreed on a price, and he just came up with what we wanted, man. And it turned out pretty good. We were thinking on something a little bit bigger, you know. But I mean, I guess in the end, the size ended up being perfect, and everything worked out great. That's kind of like.
I like it because, I mean, the way you would find it, right? If you had a bigger statue, it'd be easier to find on the beach.
The little statue
was perfect. I mean, I could see a kid digging that up or somebody just digging it up, or even if washing ashore, nobody really noticing it.
Right. So it worked out for the film. So it worked out.
Now, was your plan to make your beginning beach scene the tone for the whole film?
I mean, we wanted to give the idea that you know, like once people consume that the powdery ashes from within the statue, they would be like seeing things, you know, seeing things that are not there, and kind of making, you know, wrong decisions, and they would be, you know, once they did that, and tell us, you know, that our evil spirit was already, you know, once he was already resurrected, he would be able to control them. But so in a way, yeah, we wanted to kind of set that idea right off of the bat, you know, like, look, you know, people, when they consume this, that's, you know, they'll change their state of mind, and they'll be controlled by Kalas. You know, it's the idea, I think, where you know, I read a few of the reviews, and by speaking with some of our friends, they some people think that, oh, why they're not possessed all the way, you know, like why only when you know, Kalas appears, that, you know, he's able to tell them, you know, the three followers, you know, which who are, you know, Claudia, Sebastian, and Willie, you know, what to do. But that's exactly what we wanted to do, you know. We want them to be perfectly normal, but the idea was to pass this evilish, you know, idea that they are working towards Kalas, you know. They wanna achieve something to bring Kalas back, you know, as a physical presence, you know, not just a ghost as a ghost, you know. So.
Okay, well, since you're bringing up Kalas, I was going to beat around the bush and let people figure that out for themselves. That's fine. You have a lot of CGI, not a lot, but I do see CGI here and there. Now, how is working with CGI for you? Have you done this before, or is this your first time?
We had one very short film, which we just kind of were playing around with it a few years back. But we thought, you know, the CGI was a challenge, because not only we needed to make sure that whatever shot we did, our visual effects person would be able to do what, you know, we were set out to do, but also that would look good on the screen. So we were trying to be very careful with everything, fortunately, I mean, everything worked out in the end. Our visual effects guy, Paul Rio, he was very talented editor and visual effects person, and he was able to pull that off. I built Kalas character with this idea of a witch doctor in mind, and you know, the horns and everything, and his vestments and clothes, I spoke with Paul a few times, like, look, you know, this kind of, you know, I want him to have this this persona, you know, like, you know, he's evil, but he's stern, you know, also that you know, the acting from Eric Cram, you know, really kind of he was able to do exactly what I want him to do. He's a very talented actor, but as far as the visual effects, was you know, I told Paul what to do, and he's like, yeah, man, I got you. I got your back, you know, and he did it, you know, and it turned out pretty cool.
Just because you have such a diverse-looking cast, from the police detective to the people that work at the church to the actual followers, how was putting the cast together? Did you go through a lot of people? Because I find they all look differently, and they look like they would actually hang out together.
Yeah, the casting, it's like some people say, you know, making a film sometimes is all about the casting, and the acting is all about casting and stuff. When you're working on such a low budget film, you ended up casting the actors yourself or with your producer, you know, so pretty much was Scott and I, and, you know, some of the casting days were Scott and I and a couple other, friends that are involved with film, and, you know, they gave us their 2 cents. But mostly, we posted the audition notice and we auditioned them, locally. We have a good audition space, you know, where, a lot of our locals use, which is, SDSU library. They have this awesome, media room. And I guess half of the auditions here in town are done there. But it is great, man. You know, it's completely, you know, isolates the sound and everything is big. And so we had a few auditions there. And once we saw everybody, we were like, okay, let's choose the right players. But one interesting thing about the casting, it's funny how it is. You never know. It's a little bit like, you know, Shawshank Redemption, you know, like when they say, that Red was supposed to be an Irish guy. Our detective was supposed to be played by an African American, character. And I was like, really, like, I was kind of dead set on that. Like, you know, I want him to be African American, give more diversity to the cast and everything, you know, even more than what we got. You know, we have Latinos, we have African Americans, but we want to make the detective an African American player. But unfortunately, the people we saw, they were not really up to par to play the character. And then Joe Paulson came in, and he really nailed it. He was asking me questions about the character, and very fortunately, we had him playing the detective.
Okay. I was trying to beat around the bush. I'm going to come out. Angel Cassidy shows up in this film, which I did not expect to see at all. So where does Angel Cassidy fall into your victory? I don't see her in these kind of films often. I even had to look her up going, she doesn't look right.
Sure. Angel... From what I know, she's really, you know, trying to kind of move away from, you know, what she used to do. She's trying to really pursue her acting career, and do things in a different way. I was happily surprised, you know, when she showed up and she read for the character, and I thought, you know, it's a small part, and we thought, you know, she fits the bill pretty well. She's beautiful, with the long blonde hair, and it kind of really, like we were talking, it does set a little bit of the tone where, you know, right in the beginning there at the church. And she's talking to Father O'Malley, and, you know, hey, what are we going to do with this money? You know, hey, let's go to Bahamas.
I love that line. I thought that was a good line. It worked for me. Now, I want to go a little bit more of aesthetics for me. I want to discuss, was your pizza in the pizza boxes? Because they eat a lot of pizza in this movie.
A lot of pizza. It turns out that initially... being very honest, we didn't think that that the pizza kid Chess would be one of the would ended up being one of the main characters, and how the movie turned out, is that he really is one of the main characters. And I mean, the pizza delivery and the pizza boy, right in the beginning, they were set out to be like an essential part of the film, of the story. But we didn't think that, you know, the pizza boy was kind of going to be one of the ones saving the day. I went around, you know, looking for a pizza parlor to help us out. You know, obviously I was willing to go a different route, but fortunately, you know, I know a lot of people down here in San Diego, and I ended up talking to a friend who owns a pizza place, and he's like, yeah, man, let's do it right here. You know, he hooked us up with you know, food and everything, and he was kind enough to let us shoot, you know, on his place and everything. So that was pretty cool.
So let's give him a shout out. City Pizza really exists, that is what you're trying to say.
City Pizzeria, absolutely. They are on 6th Avenue, the best pizza in town, man.
There we go. You got to give the guy a shout out. We gave him some free food.
Yes, sir. Free food. They gave us, they hooked us up. They're great. Stu, the owner, is an old friend. Igor Pina also, who has been a long-time worker there, also, you know, helped us out, you know, connect all the dots and make that happen. So they're very helpful, very, very, very cool.
Now,
awesome.
Does the delivery driver normally for City Pizza get 27 parking tickets? Or that's just a side note for yourself? Did that come from reality?
That's a great one, man. No. Although, listen, downtown San Diego is very tough, as, you know, I guess any major city in the U.S. I mean, if you're in downtown and you need parking, I mean, you better have a garage. I mean, they do have a garage, but, I think now things changed a lot with all these, delivery services and everything. But at the time, you know, still like, you know, they had their own delivery drivers and only a couple parking spaces. So a lot of times, you know, what they did was they would come in and park on the red curb right where we were, you know, and I'm sure Stu can tell you all kinds of stories, you know, about getting tickets and everything. But I think 27 tickets was like, you know, very exaggerated, but it was good for the story.
It was. Oh, that was funny. Now, you have two characters in S&M gear.
Right.
Did they bring their own S&M gear, or should we have to go out and buy it?
No. We got all that for them. Leanne Price and Phil O'Reilly, oh, man, they became good friends. Phil, we had done a short film with him in the past, and so we were like, hey, let's bring Phil to play one of the characters. But Leanne Price, she's a fitness model, and you know, you have the looks, but you don't really know like what to expect when people come in for a read. And when she came in, I mean, I was like, wow, she's really good. You know, she could totally pull off, you know, everything I was asking for from the character. And the two worked out greatly together, man. I mean, but yeah, we got all the gears and everything. And that was a little, you know, mini micro side story there. You know, I thought that was interesting. Yeah.
So I want to ask you, how did you make her puke?
Oh, you mean the Nancy, the girl eating the pizza?
Yes.
That was mostly the work of Athena Matthews, our great makeup visual effects, practical effects artist. She came up with this idea of some I think was some kind of pear puree mixed with some other things, and it was tough for Melissa, the girl who played Nancy, because she. She had to hold that in, okay, action, cut, man, by the end of the scene, I could see she was pretty exhausted, because, we had to shoot that, several times, because also with the whole, bending over that little bench and then coming back up, and then Claudia could, do that thing with the spatula. It was, but it was basically, I think it was some kind of pear puree or apple puree or some kind of fruit puree mixed with other things. It was like her own special recipe. And I was like, wow, dude, this looks just like puke, That's great.
They look good. Now, this may be a weird question for being a horror film. Why wasn't there more blood?
I'll tell you, this particular story, right? I particularly wanted to really focus on telling a story, around the three characters and Carlos. And like I was saying in the beginning, the pizza boy and the detective, I had them, being very close to the story. But after the film was done, we just kind of augmented that and then really made the pizza boy and the detective really like one of the main characters of the story. So to answer your question, I guess I always focus more on more of a story where these characters embarked on this journey together, and then in the end, somewhat everything turns out okay, with a possibility of a little way to maybe a evil rises too, but also. The limitations of the low budget that had a little bit of to say into the film. We did what we could. We thought, hey, how can we make a bloody pool? We use some red dye and everything and try to not to focus too much on that. But that could be more blood. But I think we try to pass that idea to people as more as, kind of like showing in a different way, not visually showing the blood, but there was the blood on the kid pool, that was transported to the main pool, and I guess that was just part of how the film was constructed and everything, but maybe a little bit of focus our energy on other things too.
Now, don't worry, I haven't forgotten about the crazy basement.
Oh, yeah.
You thought I was going to leave that alone, didn't you, when I went over the locations? No, we're getting to the basement now.
The basement, man. Wow, that was a trip, man, filming that.
How long did you buy props? Did you build props? I mean, you spent a lot of time in that basement.
Yeah, we did. That basement. I love that basement, man, but... It's filmmaking, at its best, for real. Filming in that basement, we built that staircase. We had something, our production designer built a little staircase that it looks like, the characters are coming from the upstairs from the house, and they're heading to the basement. And that basement is actually in a completely different location, believe it or not. But it was filmed at VIP pedicabs store, where they it's a pedicab, is that like a rickshaw, and which carries people around, and they have this super cool location in downtown, and I was friends with a guy, you know, and he's like, dude, Danny, why you don't, you know, come over and shoot a scene here? They have this this 1880s, I think, or 1890s hand elevator, which you used to pull horses and horse carriages upstairs to be repaired and stuff. And we filmed actually upstairs and closed all the windows. We turned that place into a basement, man, and it was super cool. You know, all the tools and everything, it just worked out perfectly for what we wanted to do, you know.
So I didn't want to think. I want to write. I think you have one of the best uses of chainsaws I've seen in a long time.
Yeah, it was great, man. It was great. Yeah. The basement scene. So, one of the days we got there, interesting story too. We got there at 8 a.m. And it was around, I think, around 8 p.m. or 9 p.m., and we still had five pages to shoot. It was a very challenging day. I mean, you could see the actors and the crew. Everybody was super worn out, and I was like, man, we gotta get out of here soon, you know. That's the beauty of an independent low budget film. I knew the film inside out, man. So I grabbed the script. I was like, no, we gotta do it now, because it was our last day shooting at the basement. So I connected two parts of those five pages together. I took two pages out. There were a little bit of I don't want to say excess writing. There were cool scenes. I can tell you what they were going to be. But so in the end, I just kind of cut these two pages and connected the remaining pages together, and it all made sense in the end. But the extra scenes were the character played by Liam Price, the S&M girl. She was going to see her parents coming into the basement as an hallucination, because she had drank the powdery under a drink, and she was going to see them coming in, and as the parents would approach, you know, they would have a little conversation, and then in the end the father would turn up to be Kalas. And that's how he was going to kill her. You know, we decided, you know, we got to cut that off and just have him just kind of, you know, break her neck. And also, the way Willie was going to die was that, you know, he would be stabbed by Phil's character, which is the male S&M guy. And then he would be left out on the ground there. And then, you know, Carlos would have a conversation with Bailey, with Claudia and Sebastian, like, you know, like, look at this, this incompetent, servant, you know, and then he would burn the body, you know, with his powers, instead of, crushing him like the way he does in the film right now. And, you know, obviously, yeah, and that was like a two full pages, and we're like, no, we gotta cut that. So we remove all that, and we decided to go with what we got, what's now on the film, you know.
Okay, I don't think those were needed, actually. Let's back up.
I think you were fine without it. Yeah, it worked out great. I mean, like I said, they were just, you know, extra stuff, you know. It would have been cool, but we didn't have the time, so we just had to eliminate that. No, it would be nice for, you know, to have that option in the editing room, right?
Yeah.
But that wasn't the case.
So yeah. You have a disabled parking sign you use for the tickets.
Mm-hmm.
Did you steal it from somewhere or did you borrow it?
No, we bought it actually. We bought that. We bought that. That was actually eBay. We bought that out of eBay.
Okay.
We bought that and we're like, you know, hey, this chess kid, he's cool, but he's somewhat of a punk too, you know. So yeah.
You do have a little bit of nudity in this film. Was that any problem? I mean, not to shoot in the sense that people were worried about it. Obviously, they knew it going in.
No, we told them Don Nielsen and Summer Flores. We told them ahead of time. I mean, we're super professional. We were like, look, you know, this is how it's gonna go down, and you know, when it came down to shoot, we had. You know, people like our PAs and some of the Athena, who also did the costumes, you know, and she helped out, you know, like making like a little booth for them to change, and whenever we stopped shooting, they would come and cover them. All the cast and crew, I mean, not all of them, but. If you're not part of the scene, they are all, you know, kind of being directed to a different location where, you know, they wouldn't really be, you know, watching them, making them uncomfortable. So in the end, you know, we had worked with Don in a previous project and which I was just kind of helping out. But I knew her from this previous project. So I reached out to her. She's like, yeah, man, I'm totally game. She was super, enthusiastic about, you know, having lines and stuff. So she was pretty cool. I mean, they were super comfortable. We didn't want to put too much nudity into it. So I think we just had the right amount, you know.
Okay, you do have an old school VW van, which I was quite happy to see. I haven't seen one of those in a long time. Where should that? Who do you know to get that from?
Man, it's a very interesting how that came about. We were talking to our editor Paul Rio. You know, like, man, you know, do you think? Do you think there is a how could we make a better conclusion, you know, in the Evil Rising? Like, man, you know, like, we think, he was saying that he thought, you know, that the detective and the pizza boy, they were like really fundamental keys in the film. And they were like, okay, so how about instead of, finishing with them, at the alley, you know, with Claudia drinking, I mean, they're tossing their drinks and Claudia showing up. Why not have a scene before where, you know, where Chaz kind of, everybody sees that Chaz is still alive instead of him being dead, and he said, I think people will be happy to see that, you know, that he made it out of the basement. And that he turned out to be a real DJ, you know, and so we thought, okay, you know, that sounds really good. So because Chaz's character was a little bit, you know, he had that hippie, persona about him. And we thought, okay, what would go really well with that? So we thought, okay, a VW bus would be perfect. So we went out, same style, man. We posted stuff on Craigslist. We posted stuff everywhere. Facebook wasn't very popular for film groups and stuff at the time yet, how it is right now. But we found a guy who said, Danny, hey, I don't have these vans. these VW buses, but I know a friend who does. And then I got in touch with a friend who had the VW bus. And, sure enough, man, we came in, we paid him for a day. He came over, he came with the VW bus and, we shot it. That was shot in this, magical area of the city where you, when you drive down, you can see the Ocean Beach Pier, which is, with the palm trees, it's something to see, man. It's beautiful. You know, any part of any sightseeing or anything, but if you know the city, you know, you just know that going up there, up that hilly area, you can overlook down and you see the Ocean Beach Pier. And it's such a beautiful sight because it's got the palm trees. And when you look down, I immediately thought about that place, you know, it would look really good, in a film, you know, so we were, fortunate to be able to shoot there and we got permission from the house owners to shoot right in front of the house and everything. And so long story short, the guy came with the VW bus, and he's like, you know, well, here I am, you know, you have me for a few hours. And but funny fact is, like, when Chaz got into the van, into the VW bus, he went to turn on the VW bus. This was in the very, almost in the end, the key broke. Yeah, man, when you're making films, all kinds of things that people have no idea about happen, and the key broke, and by luckily the guy somehow he made it, he MacGyvered his way, and he made the car, he was able to start the car, and he drove off, and you know, the rest is history. But yeah, man, all through ads and a lot of persistence, we were able to get everything together.
Two things left, then fun questions. Nice touch with the postcard. I like that.
Thank you. That.
And we gotta ask: yeah. Is the sequel? Is it happening?
There is the idea. I mean, you know, it's been a long 4 years. I'm sure you have been following, how the film industry and distribution has been changing so much. Yeah. But it's a tough waters, man. And Scott and I, we have the idea for a sequel. As the film industry, also the actors and everybody else, they're moving on with their own careers. Evil Rises was great for everyone involved with the project, and it has helped everyone that participated in for the people who wanted to stay in the business. You know, our DP moved on to make other films, our production designer, our makeup artist, and you know, some of the main actors who really decided to stick with it are also making other films. So it was a good project. There is a talk of making a sequel. We don't know yet how that's going to happen or not. Maybe in a few years. Right now we're working on a second feature that's gonna have. It's lightly horror, but it's more like a thriller. It's called Sellout. It's a thriller that kind of revolves around also like a house and everything. I can tell you all about it in maybe a different conversation, but it's gonna be good.
Okay. Yeah. That's all my questions.
All right, Simon.
Now we're on to fun questions, and I know you prep for these immensely.
Shoot them.
Your favorite film?
I have to say it's Shawshank Redemption. I mean, it's my very favorite film. I mean, I tell people I have, if you allow me to elaborate on the answer, but I have three favorite films that I always tell people, which are Shawshank Redemption, Braveheart, and Point Break. Those are my top three.
I know.
It kind of, you know, I was growing up surfing and skating, and when you're a kid, you see something like that. That film blew my mind, man. You know.
One book of film that you would recommend everybody read?
Book, I would say The Alchemist by Paulo Coelho. I have read that book several times. It's really about a person's journey of finding himself. Excellent book. If you can't find that book, I mean, it's a bestseller. So it's a great book.
Last question. Your favorite snack food to eat during a film?
I love chocolate, man. I mean, that's my drug of choice. I mean, any chocolate with cashews or things inside, I mean, I really like them. Yeah.
Tell everybody where they can find your film, please.
Right now, Evil Rise is at Amazon. We are on iTunes. We are on Google Play. We are on Tube TV. We were in this major...
That's where I watched it. I watched it on Tube TV.
TV, yeah. We are coming back. They're doing monetization thing on YouTube, but on this very big channel, where they're putting that up again. But we amazing, man. I was blown away. We had 130,000 views
in
4 days. I thought it was like, wow, man, if all these people watch the film, you know, that was amazing. But it's a channel off of YouTube called Watch Movies Now. They said they're gonna, you know, they're working with our distributor to put that back on. And as soon, I believe will be available on Hulu and, one other that I cannot remember, but, it should be available on all the major platforms.
Well, thank you for your time and have a great day.
Well, thank you very much for the interview, man. You're a great person to talk to.
I appreciate that. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Appreciate it. Thanks so much. Take care, buddy.
Hey, I just want to say thank you for listening to this great interview. We have more on our website at www.extrafeatures.ca. And if you enjoyed it, can you please go to iTunes and leave us an iTunes review and like us on our Facebook page. Thank you.